Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Our first guest has plenty to celebrate. The Orville, which he produces with Seth MacFarlane and Company, was renewed by Fox last week. And tomorrow night, he's an executive producer on The Long Road Home, National Geographic's blockbuster miniseries about Black Sunday in Iraq. Jason Clark joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. The subject of undocumented immigrants is getting more play through Spanish-language drama series. Latest example, the new season of Señora Cero unfolding tonight on Telemundo. We'll spend time next half hour with Telemundo Studios' scripted TV senior executive, Carla Farias. Then we get a tune fix for If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, an Amazon Studios' newest kid-did series, thanks to Emmy-winning executive producer and head writer Ken Scarborough. Also ahead, American Idol needs its return, an upstatement on The Switch, and our new classic trivia question this week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development sponsor of the 2017 New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Don't forget, you can get a free book when you sign up for a 3-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted you're with us for the program all about television on this Monday afternoon. 66 degrees at the top of the hour. A lot of great people coming your way over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, make your voice happen, and make this number happen. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open for business. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to other buddies using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Jason Clark from The Orville and The Long Road Home joins us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Earlier this afternoon, CNBC anchor and correspondent David Faber broke the news that over the last few weeks, Walt Disney has been having talks to buy TV and movie assets from 21st Century Fox. He says right now that the talks happened over the last few weeks. However, they are not happening currently. But it is moving the stocks of Disney and Fox as well. And again, that has been breaking over the last few hours. And CNBC programming is having regular segments currently about what is going on with this possible deal. Again, these are talks that are formative. We don't know what assets are under this proposed negotiation period, but the negotiations as of lately, including today, are not happening. March 11, 2018, down as the day American Idol returns to television via ABC. Ryan Seacrest will be back as host with Lionel Richie, Katy Perry, and Luke Bryant, the judges. There will be no original episodes of The Tonight Show on NBC this week. Repeats will run tonight and the rest of the week, following the death of Gloria Fallon, mother of Tonight Show host Jimmy Fallon. She passed away Saturday at New York University's Langone Medical Center at the age of 68. Unscripted production company World of Wonder, the company creating RuPaul's Drag Race, has started a $4 a month Presents Plus service distributed through Roku, Apple TV, and other connected TV devices. Documentary series and specials will be highlighted, and no extra plays of RuPaul's Drag Race you can find there. In the last hour, NBC Universal announced that USA Network, CNBC, and NBCSN will handle more than 450 hours of 2018 Winter Olympics coverage from Yongchang, South Korea. Also, for the first time in Winter Olympics history, NBCSN and NBC will both have primetime coverage simultaneously, opposite each other. And finally, Robert Getchell, the Oscar-nominated writer of Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which became the long-running CBS comedy Alice, has passed away. His death happened on October 21st, but word was confirmed and reported by the Hollywood Reporter a few minutes ago. He was 81 years old. And that is news notes for today. Well, as I mentioned, the tease, our very first guest has a lot to celebrate. He is one of the producers of The Orville, the popular Fox space saga that last week got its go-ahead for a second season. But tomorrow night, he also comes aboard as executive producer of The Long Road Home. It is the much-anticipated miniseries based on the best-selling book by ABC News correspondent Martha Raddatz about that terrible tragedy of Black Sunday in Iraq during the Iraq War. And people who have seen it believe it's one of the best miniseries of the year and could be a surefire nominee for Best Limited Series Emmy in 2018. Joining us live from Los Angeles is Anime Exclusive, the Orville producer, and the Long Road Home executive producer, Jason Clark. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Jason, before we get to the Long Road Home, how's everybody celebrating the news that the Orville will be back for a second voyage next year?
Well, we're super excited. It's an incredible honor to have the audience embrace us the way they have, and we won't let them down. We're going to do some great work.
Why do you think, and also Seth McFarlane, everybody else working on the show, why do you all think that the audience has embraced the Orville?
Well, I think it's a little bit different than what's out there. You know, it's got kind of a more positive or utopian scientific view of the future. And science fiction has been so dystopian lately and so dark that to do something different, I think, really caught people off guard. And I think we're trying to do like a mini movie each week. It's episodic so that you can watch an episode almost out of linear context and really get the whole story. So I think it's different, and I think that's why people are embracing it.
When the program came on, some critics were wondering, is this a peon to Star Trek? Is it sort of trying to be Star Trek more humorous? What do you and Seth and everybody make of all the Star Trek comparison talk?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, everybody is fans of that version of science fiction that hasn't been around for a little bit. So I think that it's an easy comparison for fans to make. But, you know, we're also looking at shows like The Twilight Zone, shows that kind of take the human experience and build a storyline that takes place in kind of an alternate universe, but has those human stories that everybody is so familiar with. And I think that's, you know, in the pantheon of science fiction from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, that was a mainstay. And I think we can be compared to a lot of shows. But that said, I mean, of course, we're flattered that people sense that it's of a show like that.
And again, The Orville is on Thursday night at 9 p.m. on your local Fox station, and it's in the midst of its first season, which will end in a few weeks, and then we'll come back next year with another group of episodes. That'll be in 2018. Let's get to The Long Road Home. This is a much-anticipated miniseries project that National Geographic has had in the works for a number of years. It's based on the best-selling book by Martha Raddatz, the ABC News correspondent and sometimes substitute anchor on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. What is everybody feeling about this project? Why is it getting such buzz to the point where, for example, Ed Martin, my colleague friend at Media Village, thinks it's one of the most important programs of the year?
Well, I think it's about time we recognize what our veterans sacrificed for us. And, you know, the men and women who serve in this country have been, I think, literally the kind of unsung 1%, you know, and it's only 1% of the families in America who have family members that are in the service. So this is a story, a true story about the sacrifice that your everyday soldiers confronted in a war zone that was unexpected. And it's incredibly meaningful to be able to be part of telling their story and honoring their service and suggesting that, you know, these Gold Star families, the ones that didn't make it home, and also the soldiers that did make it home, they all carry this incredible burden, which is the trauma of the events that they confronted. And we as their towns and their communities, we need to embrace them and understand that it is a long road home. And when we make these decisions about going to war, we need to make those decisions smart. And so I think we really wanted to tell a story about the soldier and not about the war. And we wanted to celebrate the sacrifice, but also to recognize the cost. And so it's a very harrowing tale, but it is also one ultimately with an incredible redemption at the end, where 17 guys went in and were under fire by 1,000 attackers for over 8 hours, and 17 guys came out alive. So it's an incredible story of survival as well as a story of great loss, and there is hope at the end of it.
And that story, The Long Road Home, based on the best-selling book by ABC News correspondent Martha Raddatz, premieres tomorrow night at 9:10 Pacific time on National Geographic. We've got one of the executive producers involved in the series. That's Jason Clark. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell About. He's also one of the producers of The Orville, just got a second season renewal on Fox. You can catch that show this Thursday night at 9:10 Eastern and Pacific time on your local Fox station. If you have a question or comment for Jason, give us that call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We come your way Mondays and Fridays at this hour. And coming up on Friday, we'll have among our guests, Evan Shapiro. If the name sounds familiar, he's been around the world of cable TV for a long time on everything from presiding over Pivot to being marketing guru at IFC, and before that, True TV, when it was Court TV. And now he has his own company, and already he's got a pilot in the works at Top TV, and he worked with some of the pilot makers recently on the latest New York Television Festival. So you'll hear from Evan Shapiro. He's one of the brainiest minds I know in the world of television. I've wanted to have him on the show for years, and we finally have him this coming Friday, 3:30 to New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televised. This program, Jason, The Long Road Home, really had a long road to get on the television screens tomorrow night. I know that Mike Medavoy, the executive, one of the key people at Orion Pictures, when it was one of the major movie players, was very, very much a mover and shaker in this. At what point did you get involved with this project, and what finally made it go as a series for National Geographic?
Well, it's kind of a brief history. So 9 years ago, Mike optioned Martha's book, and they both recognized that it was an incredible point in history, a pivot point in history, if you will, about America's involvement in Iraq. And it was told, this story became a microcosm of that event. And they wrote a script with Miko Alon, who's a brilliant writer and who is our showrunner and really was amazing in defining what these 8 hours will be about. But the script was a feature script, and it was just too much story, and I think they spent several years trying to launch it. Mike gave me the book a couple of years ago, about 2.5 years ago, and said, would I read it and would I be interested? And I read it, and I was riveted. It is truly one of the great pieces of journalism I've ever read, and it is truly emotionally incredibly compelling. But I said that it couldn't really be done as a feature film. It felt like it's a bigger story. It needed a bigger canvas. I'd had a great relationship with National Geographic, having worked with them on Cosmos, A Space Time Odyssey, and I suggested this to them. And we jumped into business together. National Geographic was an incredible partner, understanding immediately what the story could be, and gave us an incredible amount of support. And with that and support from the Army and Martha's brilliant journalistic instincts that led to this story and Miko's incredible execution of it, Mike and I were really overwhelmed. And we went to the U.S. Army and said, this is your story. This is some of the guys are still very active who participate in the story, and we want to tell it. And they gave us support, and without their support, we couldn't have done it. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, the experience. So over the last 2 years, it's been a bit of a whirlwind with writing and producing the show, and we shot it all down at Fort Hood, Texas, which was an incredible experience. And it was actually the site where the guys who were involved in this Black Sunday event deployed from. So it was very meaningful. We had a lot of real veterans come and visit us on the set. We built a 12-acre set of Iraq down there, and it was basically Sadr City, Iraq, which was kind of an impoverished area of Baghdad. And the guys came down, and the Gold Star families and their family members came down, and they were moved to tears, a lot of them, because of the level of painstaking recreation that we put into making this as true and as real as possible. And they were shocked by it. And I think all of that made the actors' performances come up. It was immersive. And we were able to, I think, do something unprecedented, which is tell a soldier's story without becoming politicized or taking a side. And, you know, war affects everybody.
Yeah, and Jason, you're telling this story of Black Sunday, which took place in 2004 in its aftermath, and recreating Iraq, recreating that battlefield so close to a U.S. Army base. It had to be, at times, it was a very spooky feeling or a very mysterious feeling that here you were, along with everybody else, recreating this battle, recreating this moment of time that impacted so many soldiers. Near a soldier's base right here in the U.S. of A.
And it's even more compelling than that, because the actual location where we built it was a training village were the actual soldiers who were involved in this Black Sunday event back in 2004. It's the last place they trained for military exercises before they deployed. So when we recreated on that site and had some of those actual soldiers who were part of this deployment working with us as technical advisors on the show and everything, I can't tell you how moving it was for them and spooky it was for them to see that site transformed into Solder City. I mean, we were down to Seth Reeder did a brilliant job, our production designer, recreated actual buildings from photographs and from definitions that he was given by the soldiers and descriptions he was given by these soldiers. And they were it was spooky. At times it was really spooky. And a couple of them said they needed to kind of walk the set alone to kind of immerse themselves there to connect to those feelings that are so traumatic for them to connect to. So I'm hoping that the show has a similar effect in that, you know, the honesty that we tried to tell the story with and the gripping reality of the truth is more powerful than the fiction of it, and that it could have the opportunity for some of these guys to heal.
In some modest way. Tell me about the cast, Jason, and how they were assembled, because it's not a name cast. And maybe that this is one of those projects where that's good, that there is no, you know, one big identifiable name that sort of pulls the story together or sort of like becomes the leader of the crew.
Yeah, E.J. Bonilla plays Lieutenant Shane Aguero. He's the leader of the platoon that gets pinned down. And John Beavers is one of his sergeants who's amazing. Jorge Diaz and Ian Quinlan play a couple of guys that were known as the Twins, Israel Garza and Robert Arciaga, who were both specialists and really incredible guys. We have Michael Kelly, who plays Lieutenant Gary Valesky, who was the leader of this group and platoon, and Jason Ritter, who plays Denemy. Sarah Wayne Callies plays Valesky's wife, Leanne Valesky, who was a very important person in the family notification center. And I just want to note to you guys that, you know, half of this story actually takes place in the home front. And unlike other shows you've seen before about battles, we really see how the family is affected in real time as the story lays out. We had an incredible cast, and I think, you know, we all wanted to cast with authentic people who really, had a sense of the characters they were portraying. And then we had the benefit of the real people, but also the actors took it as an incredible honor to meet the real people they were portraying in some cases, or the families of the survivors of those real people. So when they went into these performances, they really tried to honor the memory of these people in a way that was meaningful. And I think that really, between that and shooting at the real location where the guys lived before they deployed, and filming the Solder City scenes on the training village where they trained, it was so an immersive for those actors that I think the performances really gained something intangible, you know, an emotional connection to the story. And you can see some of the actors when you compare them with the real people, they kind of look alike too, which is they kind of grew in that direction.
Did Martha Rath herself come down to the set at all?
A lot. She was there. This is a very important story for her, and these are her friends. These soldiers remain her friends after many, many years after this battle. And this was an incredible experience for her. And I think she watched some of the guys that worked with us and saw how they were, began to be able to deal with some trauma that they had experienced here, but also to put it in perspective in a way that's meaningful. I mean, we had an incredible cast and crew and great support. And Martha was in no small part our kind of moral compass in all this. You know, she was our conscience. And I think that we achieved something incredibly powerful and moving, in part because every single person recognized their role to do right by the story.
Of all the situations that Martha Raddatz has covered in her great career at ABC News, this is the only one she has written a book about. And that book comes to life tomorrow, The Long Road Home, on National Geographic, 9 to any specific time, with a special two-hour episode, and then other episodes will be coming as the month unfolds. Jason Clark is one of the executive producers of that series. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Lies. He's also one of the producers of The Orville, which is now its first season, which is on Thursday nights at 9 on Fox. And if you have a question or comment for Jason, got a few more minutes with him, so get on the phone and make the number happen, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you're a first-time listener to our show, you can catch up on recent episodes by going to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check us out on podcasts at iTunes.com and on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you, or order it online. This is one of those miniseries, Jason, that has multiple directors, in this case two, and they're two good ones. They both won Emmys for their work, Phil Abraham and Mikhail Solomon. Mikhail, I know, has had a great career with made-for-TV movies in particular. What did they both bring to the table?
Well, they brought their experience and their, you know, they're both, their backgrounds in both cases is cinematography. And we wanted to make sure that we got the scope of this story right, and that we had a nice balance between the home front and the war front. And they're both incredible with actors and have dealt with kind of drama, tragedy, all of the elements of this. And really what they brought is their passion. And both were passionate partners, and I want to thank them both because they're really, really talented, and they have an incredible way to tell a story where it unfolds in front of you, and it's always developing. And I think that a part of that is their background in cinematography, and part of it is just their their knowledge of performance. Well, they both brought something special, and they were a little bit different in their approaches, but it's seamless the way that they came together and told the story. So even though it's one story told by two filmmakers, I think you get a sense that it is seamless in its execution and it's an emotional and the emotional journey of it.
There was a military group that earlier today came out with citations for various television and film projects, and one of them was for The Long Road Home. And in the citation, I believe it says, this is according to a story in Variety that came out on the website this afternoon, that your project was cited for telling the truth about these soldiers, not just the fact they were in battle, but what came out of that battle and how they then had to try to readjust to life with their families on the home front. I'm curious if you've heard that kind of reaction from other veterans groups about what you've done.
Yeah, I think so. And part of that may also be that we told a big part of the story on the home front. So you begin to understand who these people are when they're not just in uniform. And when you do that, then you really understand the stakes of these characters and what going home means and what coming home means to them and their families. You know, one of the, just as an aside, a wonderful woman told me a story about she'd offered her house to one of the Gold Star families when they'd lost their son in battle. And she asked how many people, because she had a fairly big house. She said, how many people can we expect? And the woman, the mother said, well, I'm expecting 500. And the woman kind of laughed and said, no, I mean immediate family. And the woman said, I do mean immediate family. The mother said that was immediate family. So you know how big the ripples are in the pond for each one of these people that we put in harm's way out there. And, you know, our story, we also tried to balance the story by telling the story of the Iraqi home front. We talk about the interpreter. And one of our episodes is actually dedicated to his story, where you get to understand his backstory and understand who he is and how he ended up there. And the family that our group is pinned down with, their story is told. So we really try to be fair in kind of defining all of these stories. But the result of it is you feel like you really know these people and you really feel like you understand what it means to be in a situation like this.
Jason, what's next for you, given that this project premieres tomorrow night? You then have a year to wait for the second season of The Orville. Are you going to be taking some time off or going jumping into another project or start developing season two of Orville?
Well, we're gonna probably jump in with both feet on the Orville. I might have another show or so up my sleeve right now that we're getting close on. It's a little too early to suggest, but I also think Martha's story, as meaningful as this story is, there's other stories that feel as equally important to tell. It's interesting because, you know, this is a small piece of our history of conflict in the United States. And when we unpacked it, we saw how meaningful it was and what a universal connection it has worldwide to all people who serve or the families of people who serve. So I think that there's other stories that are like this that are important. And, you know, Mike Medavoy said, I've only made five war pictures. Let's see, Apocalypse Now. And then he says the Thin Red Line, Coming Home, and Platoon. And he said Apocalypse Now came out, and it was a little early for the audience. And he said Coming Home was also a little bit early for the audience. But when Platoon hit, it was the right time for that story to be told. I think these stories are at their right time because we have some distance now from these conflicts as a society. And I think it's important to remind people of the sacrifice, particularly as we approach this Veterans Day. There's something for really emotional at the core of this and universal at the core of this. And so I think I could see trying to do another story in the same vein. I did a movie called Act of Valor that had active duty Navy SEALs in the past. And I've done I've done everything from the Ted movies to the Stuart Little movies to all kinds of stuff. So I think you can bet that whatever I do, it'll have a human story at the center of it.
And I've seen the Stuart Little movies. If you've never seen them, with Hugh Laurie and Michael J. Fox as the voice of Stuart Little, they're just plain wonderful fun and some of the best family entertainment you will see in a very, very long time. If you didn't catch the movies, catch it somewhere because they're really, really great. My Media Village colleague Ed Martin called The Long Road Home one of the year's most important television stories. And it begins tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on National Geographic. Check your local where that network is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, you go to natgeotv.com. That's natgeotv.com. And once again, The Orville, you can catch that on Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox station. So check with listening where that station is in your area. And, of course, for more details online with that, Fox.com. Jason Clark, thank you so much for being here. Congratulations on getting first The Orville into season two and Long Road Home finally across the finish line starting tomorrow night. All the very best with both projects and everything else you do down the road. I have a hunch, by the way, with Long Road Home, we may be seeing you and your fellow folks around anytime next fall.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on the show, and I really appreciate it. And enjoy both shows. I think we try to do something important in both cases, and I think we're excited to have an audience see it finally. The Long Road Home.
You got it, Jason. All the greatest. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Jason Clark, producer of The Orville, executive producer of The Long Road Home, joining us live from Los Angeles. Well, our topic trivia question of the week and more tomorrow. We tell live after some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're looking for something fun, particularly from the great writer Jeffrey Archer, how about this? A collection of wonderful short stories called Telltale, narrated by Robert Backhouse. And you can find that right now at Audible.com. And then you got to do to get that book in audio form, or something else you like in any category you like, just go to this URL and make it happen, audibletrial.com/televised. Audible is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and certainly inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So don't forget, sign up, audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book, 1 month trial of the service, quick customer service too for the fine folks at Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And along the way, hear for yourself why Audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And first, I want to update you on last week's question that we took place, kept going into the weekend. On Facebook over the weekend, we did get the correct answer. However, we have not heard back by email from that person. So we're going to give that person some time to communicate with us by email, and hopefully by Friday we'll have that together. And if so, that person will win the Genius Finale DVD from Nat Geo and the showrunner book by legendary producer Cy Chermak. So we'll give that person some time to communicate with us, and if they do it by Friday, that person will win those two prizes. And in any event, we will tell you the answer to that question, which was, what was Surfside 6 on Friday's show. But right now, here's our latest question. And if you first with the correct answer, you will win a wonderful book called Walking Distance, Remembering Classic Episodes from Classic Television, written by Victor Kahn, who was on this program some time back. Anyway, here's the question. Remember Police Story? Great NBC show in the 1970s with an anthology series about the world, both on and off duty, of police all over the place? Well, we want to know who created that show, who, by the way, was himself formerly involved in the police department. Very famous novelist did that show. So here's the question. Who created Police Story? Who created Police Story? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you are from. First with correct answer by Friday's show, you will win the wonderful book, Walking Distance, Remembering Classic Episodes from Classic Television, by Victor L. Kahn, published by Resource Publications. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So email simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you just missed the question, no problem. I will post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page. Also, my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. When we come back, we're going live to Miami. We'll speak with one of the top scripted television people in Spanish-language television from Telemundo Studios, Carlos Arias, whose latest original production, Señor Acero, premieres tonight at 10. She joins us live after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, where the 25-minute list is around the world every month and growing. It's your home for golf getaways. Check it out tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best meet you on 24/7, always on hand at YouTube.com. Welcome back tomorrow to our televised 90 edition coming your way this Monday afternoon. Welcome to you just joining us along the way. Simon Applebaum with you live on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for our guests coming up in the hour ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our next guest is one of the movers and shakers when it comes to Spanish language dramatic programming. She is a telenovela writer. Her credits include the wonderful series of several years ago, Doña Salis, which was a groundbreaking show, by the way, in the telenovela genre. And right now, she is Senior Vice President of Scripted Television at Telemundo Studios, whose latest original production, the latest season of Señora Acero, premieres tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Joining us live from Miami, great to have back once again, Carla Ferrias. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Simon. Nice to be back.
Same here. Carla, Señor Acero has become a big hit for your network at 10 o'clock and several seasons now in. But this season ahead coming tonight is going to be quite special.
Yes, indeed. It's season number 4. And as you know, our formats are much longer than the general market's formats. I mean, our shows are from 60 to 80 episodes. So to have a season 4, it's wonderful for us. It's a great success. And what makes this season 4 so special is that, you know, as you know, season 1, season 2 was more based on narco stories and the laundering of money. And season 3, we presented a new character since Sara Acero died at the end of the second season. And we introduced in the third season Vicenta Acero, a sister of Sarah Acero. And what makes season 4 special to us is that I think we touch upon a human topic with more detail. I mean, certainly, you know, money laundering, it's still part of the Acero family's business. But the end, let me retrace so that you can follow me. The end of season 3, we have the death of the governor of Chihuahua, which is Cucho Cáceres. And so when season 4 begins, we have the Mexican and U.S. government after the Aceros. And the Acero family, they reestablished themselves in Tamaulipas on the Mexican side. And they will continue the laundering money business, but with a twist, which is that much of the proceeds will go into helping illegal immigrants cross the border from Mexico into the U.S. And, you know, this topic, it's very hot right now, obviously, with the whole building of a bigger wall. And we traveled, actually, to the border. I traveled, and the authors of the series traveled, Roberto Estopelo and Indira Páez. We all traveled to the border. And we interviewed with Border Patrol officials and people who actually crossed the border. And certainly, this is fiction, and we pretty much just got inspired by their stories. But it's filled with that human touch and what stories that ring real and are it's part of the life of many of our audience.
Mm-hmm. This is not the first time that Telemundo has tackled the subject of what some would call undocumented immigrants, some would call legal immigration. Bottom Miss Mosquito, which was a very big hit for the network, it was like over a year ago, also dealt with that and dealt with it from a very human story, who was a father coming across the border to try to make a new life for himself and for his family. In this case, you have a character that some might call notorious, and a situation some might call notorious, that's money laundering, which in a way is now coming back into the public conversation, but not because of the situation as described by your series, but by other situations. How do you handle a subject that is sensitive like immigration reform or illegal immigration, undocumented immigrants, which can touch people all sorts of ways?
Yes, well, as you mentioned, we really began this journey with Bajo el Mismo Cielo, where we decided that we should not censor ourselves, and we are a U.S. Hispanic network, and so we should speak to the U.S. Hispanic experience. And after Bajo el Mismo Cielo, we have delved even deeper into the stories of that are quite difficult, because you understand every side and every point of view. I mean, you talk to agents in Border Patrol, they're doing their job. I actually interviewed an agent in McAllen, and that I happened, you know, we were visiting, and it was so interesting because he is the son of a North American man, and the mother is Mexican. So as you can imagine, he's quite torn in his point of view, but at the end of the day, he's doing the job, and he does agree there has to be checks and balances, and you need to make sure that people that enter into your country, and just as anybody that will go into your house, you know, they go through the necessary screening. But, you know, it is a very difficult subject matter, because the reality is that, you know, illegal immigration, it's not only a big problem in the United States, it's happening around the world. But the truth is that immigration will just always continue happening, as it has happened throughout, you know, all the ages, as long as people can, they feel they can have a better life in another country, they will try to do that. And there's nothing wrong if the people that do want to achieve this dream come with good intentions and willing to work. You know, the problem arises, of course, when that's not the case. And what's interesting in some of the stories that we are inspired on is that some of the people that have this good intentions are actually sometimes kidnapped by the coyotes that are supposedly taking them over, and they're kidnapped and then sold into, to the narcos, and they are sold in some of the, you know, human trafficking. There are women that are placed in prostitution, basically. So there's, you know, they're tough subject matters, and I think it's necessary to talk about them. I mean, certainly this is not a documentary. Again, this is fictional, but stories that are inspired in real life. In real life experiences, I think it's important. Television should be a mirror to our life. I mean, we should be able to turn TV on and not only have fun, but also see, and which is happening, and see shows that you say, wow, you know, that make you think, that make you understand our world perhaps a little better.
Mm-hmm. Much of your program this season was taped along the U.S.-Mexico border. How much cooperation did you get from the Border Patrol? And were there any concerns in terms of your crew booing as much as you did in terms of sequences, particularly critical sequences of the scripts along the border?
They were incredibly helpful, let me tell you. I think the whole institution, it's absolutely open, absolutely helpful. They tell you, you know, their point of view, their side of the story. And you know, they were nothing but helpful.
We're speaking with Carmela Farias. She is one of the key scripted people at Telemundo Studios, and their latest presentation, the fourth season opener of Señor Acero, subtitled La Coyote, will premiere tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Telemundo stations and cable affiliates all over the country. Carmela joins live from Telemundo's headquarters in Miami, Florida, this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on this Monday afternoon here in November 2017. And if you have a question or comment for Perla, don't be shy. Give us the ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. Rick Whitlock, friend from Philadelphia, just joined us in the room. You'll find that room on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, coming up on Friday, among our guests, with Evan Shapiro, the former president of Pivot, the former head of CISO, the NBC Universal Digitally Distributed Comedy Network, which is wrapping up a two-year run at the end of the year. And now he has his own production company. He's got a pilot going on with Talk TV, and he also recently helped not one, but two pilot makers at the recent New York Television Festival. So love Evan Shapiro on. I wanted to have him on for a long time. I think he's one of the great minds in television. And we'll get his thoughts about where TV's at, where it's going with things like smart TV sets and other unique projects, technology going on. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Perla, it seems of late, when it comes to looking at the whole Spanish language television dramatic universe, that it seems that the forming now is like in three categories, whether it's in telenovela or super series or weekly hour dramas. You have the Narcos drama, in such things as El Señor de los Cielos or El Chapo or Narcos from Netflix. You have the musical bio drama or musical themed or lace drama like El Vato on your sister network Universo, or whether it is other shows that dealt with Marcelia, for example, which was a well-done novella on your network. And then you have the immigration reforms, it's the immigration situation. What do you make of this whole trend? Is that a pretty accurate picture that it seems like these three categories are what's dominating the whole genre right now?
I would add a fourth. I would say that a very good melodrama, it's still definitely something that the audience wants to see. We had La Doña not long ago on our air, and it wasn't really about immigration, and it was a huge success. You know, certainly it touched upon subjects that feel real to the audience. In the case of La Doña, we dwelt into the sexual assault, which actually nowadays it's all over the place with what's happening in Hollywood. And so as long as you, as the public feels that what they're watching can happen and it's realistic, then I think it has a big possibility of appealing to the audience. We have certainly, you know, the stories of Narcos, it's very appealing. You know, you have action, you have people can recognize part of the history. That's what's happened with us with El Señor de los Cielos. We actually last week on Thursday was our finale, season 5, and the finale ranked as the number one show at 10 p.m. outperforming all broadcast networks among adults 18 to 49 and adults 18 to 34. So, forgive me for tooting my horn, but we're all very excited here at Telemundo. And you know, the musical biodrama, certainly it's also a format that we're doing very well in. We have on the air Mariposa de Barrio, which tonight is the finale of Mariposa de Barrio, based on the life of Jenny Rivera, written by Rosana Negrin. And not only was this show based on Jenny's book, Unbreakable, but I traveled with the author to L.A., and we interviewed her family. And it was incredible to be able to have all the many different point of views. And that's what, we tried to do in the show, just weave in the different points of view of that Jenny's life, you know. And it's been wonderful. I mean, the public has responded. I think they relate to Jenny's character. They see this woman who was born in the USA, but who had the parents, the Mexican parents, and the education, you know, that was given to her was very traditional, and how she tried to break away from certain rules, how being a woman, you know, being a woman in Mexico at the time perhaps had many more constraints than what it meant being a woman in the United States, and she got that from being here in this country. She realized that she, you know, she could be anything that she wanted to. And, and she was the big star of the family. She still is. So that's a great story. We are also going to be working, and we are working on another bio-musical, which is The Life of Jose Jose, one of the most important musical icons of Hispanic music. And, in the 9 p.m., we work on very strong melodramas, just as I talked to you about La Doña. We have on air season 2 of Sin Senos, Si Hay Paraíso. We have also started giving options of shows on our prime time at 9 p.m., which can be sequels. And Sin Senos, Si Hay Paraíso 2 is our first second season, and we have other shows that hopefully we will also be able to see many other seasons. And we're coming up this month also with a new melodrama called Sangre de mi Tierra. And again, as you were saying, the theme of immigration is very strong also in that story, Sangre de mi Tierra. And what we worked in the story is, okay, what happens once you make it? You know, because not all immigrants go through a hard time. I mean, you go through a hard time perhaps in the beginning, but then, you know, you work hard and you can achieve the American dream. That's why so many immigrants keep coming, because the American dream is more achievable. It's true, less and less, even for, you know, even if you're born here, the American dream is less achievable. But what we wanted to present in the story was the two generations. The families that arrived, that worked hard, that achieved their dream, and the sons and daughters who were born in the United States, and how those two world, you know, points of views in the world start conflicting, because it's just very different when you come to this country and you are, sort of tied to your values of your original homeland, and then when you have your kids and they grow up with the freedom and the expectations that you have once you're born here. And so that creates conflict. And in the particular story, what creates the huge conflict is that there is an accident, a horrific accident that takes the life of one of the children. So these two families are torn apart, and they will, you know, confront them, you know, the two bands will confront themselves.
Mm-hmm. Because of the success of these bio musicals or musical-laced dramas, whether they are weekly hours or telenovela half-hour hours or the super series mold, have you thought about doing bio dramas dealing with other walks of life or other aspects, like dancers or technology people who come up with, or medical people who come up with medical breakthroughs, to take the bio format and adapt it to other ways of life?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, right now we have a short format coming up tomorrow on the air at 8 o'clock, El César, which is the story of this very famous boxer. And so, of course, we do not want to limit ourselves to, a specific genre. We are expanding into different bio stories that could be relevant and interesting for our public.
Since that's boxing, have you looked at other sports dramas, say baseball players or football players or players in other sports?
We are working on a story related to soccer, but it's not necessarily based in a real person. But, you know, we could happen in one of the short formats. We're working on it, you know. There is limitations to what I can tell you about on the air about our future pipeline. But we do. We are considering many possibilities of, you know, known, well-known personalities in different walks of life.
The point we're talking about is the Señora Cero, La Coyote, the fourth season of this popular miniseries drama, or as Telemundo likes to call them, the super series. They're usually on at 10 p.m. weeknights, and that's where you will find Señora Cero Season 4 tonight, 10 p.m. Pacific time on Telemundo stations and cable affiliates around the country. And we've got Paola Feria. She's one of the key scripted TV people at Telemundo, operating from Telemundo Studios in Miami, Florida. And that's where we find her today. This half hour on Tomorrow will be televised. Simon Appleben, I'm with you live from New York. Happy you're with us for the conversation. If you have a question or comment, bring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. We welcome guest 937 into the room. Remember, you can catch us anytime on podcast. Just go to iTunes.com, check out our recent episodes, or go to Apple TV if you've got that particular device connected to your television set, and just go to the iTunes podcast app there. You can not only catch our program, but other Blog Talk Radio shows there as well. And if you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. When it comes to Telemundo next year, Pearl, how much of the schedule is set, and how much do you have to still make happen?
Well, you know, programming at the end of the day plays around and decides and makes last-minute changes. What I can tell you is that what's great about working in Telemundo now is that we do have development, which is we never had before. I mean, we have development, like we're working in like for 2019, and we have titles that we're thinking of for 2020. And that just tells you how robust it is, and how, especially since our formats are getting shorter. I mean, we used to have telenovelas. The last one we had was La Doña of 120 episodes, and we used to have episodes 120 to 160 episodes, and now we are moving towards shorter formats of 60 to 80 in pretty much all time slots. Not that it means that we may not go back to doing the longer formats, but for now we're really working on shorter formats, and so as you can imagine, that multiplies the titles and the work in development. But it's very exciting. I think it's a lot of fun to be working in Telemundo, because Telemundo is the Hispanic voice of the United States, and but we're part of that market. And as you saw when I told you the numbers of El Señor de los Cielos season 5, I mean, we're measured against the general market, and so it's a lot of fun, and it's very exciting, because that the being part of the general market has opened our eyes and has inspired us to tackle themes and subject matters that perhaps were not, you know, regularly thought of in traditional telenovelas.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to the content itself, just taking that a little further, where do you see things going with the whole dramatic universe in general? For example, next year, Azteca America is launching its own immigration project called The Wall, where it's going to be sort of a law and order, ripped from the headlines approach, but it's also going to be somewhat anthological, where each episode is going to deal, or each set of episodes is going to deal with a particular person and how they deal with the wall, whether they are whatever side of the situation that they're on, and then bring them all together at the end. I mean, looking at, for example, anthology shows, which now seems to be back in vogue, where every episode is a different story, or whether maybe perhaps doing dramedies, or even perhaps trying a comedy, which is something that still is like maybe the holy grail of Spanish language shows that we haven't seen yet, is a half-hour comedy series produced in the United States that's a sitcom or comedy format.
Well, I think what's fun about this moment is that there's an opening for every genre. As long as, you know, as it rings true and the public wants to see it, there's such diversity that, and I think, you know, Simon, I think part of the reason why we have titles like you were telling me about this, about The Wall, is that we, whether we like it or not, the reality is in the United States, we're a mixed group. I mean, we are a mixed of races. And the fact that Telemundo began addressing the reality of a big chunk of the population in the United States. I think it also opened the eyes of other networks in the general market and said, hey, I mean, you know, these are people are also our viewers, and the Hispanic viewers, you know, they're bilingual. They watch Spanish and they watch English. And so let's go into these topics that maybe we never thought of exploring. You know, let's talk about the wall, and let's talk about what the Border Patrol feels and what that immigrant feels. And it's the reality of our world. I mean, I think television is pretty much like a mirror and of who we are at the moment, whether it is in drama or in comedy. And we turn it on and we just relate to those characters and accompany them. And there's so many different formats, which I think makes it very exciting to be part of, to be a writer. We have so many, many different options and formats to express ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, though, I wanted to get your thoughts about how do we get the pipeline open for more talents, particularly Latino talents, to get into television. For example, earlier this summer in Washington, D.C., Univision, other networks, production companies, others formed a group called the Creative Fred Foundation, which I understand is chaired by Henry Louis Gates, the very notable professor, and he's also been a PBS host on various programs, which is trying to open up the doors for more Latino, people of color, writers, producers, and so forth, to get their not only get their ideas going, but also to get their shows going somewhere on the air. Last week, or I should say 2 weeks ago, Fusion, which is part of Univision, started an open call process with their creative board, which has Viola Davis and Jodie Foster among their talent, and Gates is also involved in it too, where people can submit projects for scripted and unscripted shows, and they don't need a talent agent. They can do it with or without an agent or some representative. And sometimes people think that the talent agent, if you go to many events where you discuss how to get into television, people say you need an agent, you need a talent rep, you got to do it. People will not read your scripts or not consider your ideas unless you have one. Has there been anything in, where you are about either joining up with a group like Creative Fed Foundation or maybe starting other projects to try to bring more people into the pipeline, more Latino writers or more writers of color or producers of color generally into the television industry?
Well, first of all, we've always had like an open policy that anybody can submit their ideas. We don't work on the authors, on the writer side of the business. We do not have talent agents. I mean, anybody, even yourself, if anybody that wants to submit an idea, we're open to receiving it. We have a whole process, of course. We have a legal process that we have to complete. And then we have a department that pretty much just evaluates what we receive. And according to the strategy of programming, which, we tell them this is what we're looking for at this moment, they pretty much screen everything that we receive, which is a lot. We receive a lot from all over the world. I mean, I would tell you maybe 4 years ago, everything that we received was really from Central America and South America. But nowadays, we get a lot of proposals from Spain also. And we have worked with Spanish writers. So we are very, very open, and we're always, in the lookout for talent. Although we work with talent from all over the Hispanic spectrum. I mean, I have writers that are in Mexico. I have writers that are in Chile. I have writers in Venezuela. I have writers in Colombia, in Argentina, in Spain. I mean, and that's another really, really fun factor of this job is that you get to work with writers, from all over, and they each have a specific point of view of show business, and it's the adaptation to being produced for the Hispanic U.S., first of all, and then the international community. So in that sense, I mean, we're always open to receive new talent, and we have in Telemundo, we once had, we worked with a college, and I don't remember the name of the college. I'm thinking maybe it was, I don't remember the exact name. But we worked and we created like a masterclass, and different people would go, and we then chose from that group of people, we chose several who actually then became part of the staff in the development department.
Carolyn Miranda plays Señora Cero, La Coyote, the fourth season of that popular series that premieres tonight on Telemundo, both on local broadcast stations and cable, depending on where you are around the country. The start time, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Again, check your local list where Telemundo is available in the area on broadcast, cable, sometimes on satellite. And for more details about the program online, you can go to telemundo.com. It's www.telemundo.com. The fourth season of Señora Cero, La Coyote, tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. Proto Ferris from Telemundo Studios, thank you again for joining us. A pleasure all the way. All the best with tonight's premiere, and much more stuff coming from your studios in the months ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Simon. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
Same here. Let's do it again soon. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Proto Ferris joining us live from Telemundo Studios headquarters in Miami, Florida. When we come back, we'll introduce you to someone whose work in children's television has been amazing and Emmy-winning. His name is Ken Scarborough, and his latest work premieres tomorrow on Amazon Studios. It's called If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. We'll explain that title. It's a real catchy one, and what he does. Ken joins us live from Woodstock, New York, after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet. It's www.blogtalkradio.com with the 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's home for Vibration Radio. It's radio like you've never heard it before. Check it out tomorrow night. Special time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Miami Televised on this Monday afternoon, nighting edition. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, New York. Good to have you aboard. We have another wonderful guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. And we invite you to always be part of the program. We want to hear you because you make the show go even further than before. So all you have to do is pick up the phone, dial in, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. The other way you get involved with chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Rick Will, my friend from Philadelphia, is still in the room. And you can find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, if you have Facebook timeline, you can connect others to the show. All you have to do is use the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people, as we say, can be live with you and us. In the early 1990s, Nickelodeon premiered three new unique animated shows, and they were special because they were all done by creators. And the first of those shows was Doug, created by a marvelous person named Jim Jenkins. The show had a long life on Nickelodeon, later on Disney and on ABC. My next guest was the original story editor and one of the key writers of Doug, and he has gone on to have a fantastic career in the world of animation writing. His credits include Sesame Street, author, and Curious George. And now he is the executive producer and the head writer of If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, which starts tomorrow on smart TV sets and smart devices through Amazon. Joining us live from Woodstock, New York, Emmy Award winner Ken Scarborough. Ken, great to have you with us.
Hi, Simon. It's nice to be here.
I got to ask you about Doug because I was one of the people that caught the premiere here in New York of those three series, Doug, Rugrats, and the Ren and Stimpy Show. And Doug was, I think, of the three, the one that people were sort of a little subdued about. But it really turned out to have a wonderful charm. Your writing was part of it. Jim's work, Billy West playing Doug, everybody involved, I thought, made a whale of a program.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, it's funny. It does seem to have a life, and people come up who are surprisingly old, because it's been a while, who really were affected by the show. I think it was fun to do a cartoon that was about actual sort of kid issues and about growing up and the girl down the block and things like that that were kind of touched people in a way. I was a fan of all three of the Nicktoons, all three of the initial ones and then the subsequent ones. But it's very sweet of you to remember Doug. It was a lot of fun.
And it was very down to earth, too. The scripts were down to earth. The situation, like you said, everybody could understand them. You could identify with them. You could identify with Doug. You know, he was sort of like the kid that was a little shy. The kid was trying to fit in. The kid that was trying to, like, but also go his own way, too.
Yeah.
Whether it was with his parents or the girl he pined about for years. And it just seemed to be this wonderful, earthy charm that just kept going episode after episode.
Yeah, it was a very sweet character, very much like the creator, Jim Jenkins. And part of the challenge of that was to kind of keep him surrounded and keep it bouncing, even though he was a nice guy, getting him into situations that none of us would want to be in, but he found himself in over and over. So
fast forward, here we are, 2017, you're a day away from premiering your latest series, which you're both executive producing and your head writing. How did you come up with the series? Actually, it was based on a best-selling group of books. So how did you find the books, and then how did it get to become an Amazon series?
Well, they came to me, I think ever since Arthur, I've sort of become the book guy. People do come to me when they have a book property. I go out and pitch things and they say, that's a great idea. We have this book. And in this case, they came to me and I think several other people and asked for our take on it. And I'd seen the books, but I hadn't really had a chance to kind of crack them and see what they were like as a potential TV show. And I think when you open those books, the energy and the exuberance of Mouse, he just jumps off the page. You know, that's a credit both to Laura Numeroff, who wrote the words, but also to Felicia Bond, who illustrated it. I mean, I think the humor is half of it is in the drawings and the way they contrast or amplify what the words are. And I just thought it was just an amazing, joyful thing. Here's this little character who didn't think of size as any sort of challenge, and I think like all kids, but he was a little creature in a big world, and he didn't see any limitation in that. And so that was super fun. And you mentioned the title before. It's kind of interesting too, as a piece of literature. Every one of them is sort of, if you think about it, theoretical. Every book starts with an if. There's five: if you give a mouse a cookie, if you give a dog a donut, if you give a mouse a muffin. Each one of them starts with the word if, and somewhere towards the end of the book, there's a then. There's a chances are he might do this. So it's an interesting kind of, every book is one kind of thought that jumps off in different directions, but really is a single thought. So that's something that was kind of fascinating as a piece of literature too, to kind of look at and parse.
Well, welcome guest 954 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04. If you have a question or a comment, put it in the room or give us that call, 646-652-2906. You've had a very, a really amazing career in animation writing because you've done work for cable with Nickelodeon. You've done work for public television, author, and Curious George and Sesame Street. And now here you are in sort of the new environment of smart TV sets and devices through Amazon. Give us a sense of the different approaches when you had to do for one medium versus another part of the medium, and now you have it for Amazon. How much freedom, has it been consistent in terms of creative freedom? Has it been consistent in terms of, have you had to, from one part of the medium to another, change your writing style or change your producing approach?
That's really interesting. In a weird way, I'm like you. I'm going, what do I have to do going into this thing to kind of think of it as something where kids can select their own episodes at random, or is there a different way that we need to think about format when we go on to something like an Amazon thing like this? But in truth, I think people digest stories the same way. They want to know what they want to know. And I've lucked out being in this medium where my values are very much aligned with the kind of things that all of these places have wanted to share with kids. And so, I've been a little bit lucky because I can kind of choose things that I feel like line up with what I would want to say or what I'd want to hear or what I think would be great to hear as a kid. So in every case, be it PBS or be it ABC when Doug was over there, or now at Amazon with Melissa Wolf and with Tara Sorensen, it really feels hand in glove that they're really looking out to do something positive for kids and to be something that's not just there to pass some time or to pick nickels out of their pockets in order to sell them something, but to really give them something, to take the time that, kids give you their time, they give you their attention. And it's so meaningful and important to them at this age. I mean, they're sucking up things like sponges to have something to say, to not just kind of sit and talk. So in a weird way, at its heart, at its core, which isn't to say we don't have massive fights and throw shoes at each other and do all the typical things that you do in TV because everyone's passionate about how it should be. But for the but I think everyone's heart is in the right place, and everyone wants to give something to this audience, because a lot of times they're moms, a lot of times they're parents, and so they understand that, that this is a valuable audience, and that you can really have something to say that'll carry them for life. So I think it's all been. I'm a Pollyanna. I know I sound like Pollyanna, but it's just been very lucky for me, and I've worked with really great people all the way along.
Mm-hmm. You're hearing Ken Scarborough. He's the Emmy Award-winning executive producer and head writer of Amazon Studios' latest tune series for One and All. It's called If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, and it premieres tomorrow. And if you have a smart TV set or smart TV device that has Amazon, or if you have Amazon Fire's TV sets or streaming sticks or set-top boxes, you can get the series. Ken joins us live from Woodstock, New York this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you as always, Mondays and Fridays here at 3 o'clock normally, Eastern, that's noon Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio with this promo about television. If a question or comment for Ken, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up later this half hour, we'll have an up segment where we bring back The Switch. It's a TV series that we focused on back in August, and thanks to an announcement recently from FX about a new series from Ryan Murphy, it's back in the news. We'll show you how later on this half hour. Ken, talk more about the series, because it has, because of the title, it has that kind of what-if feeling. Like, it seems like every episode is going to be, if you give, and there's, by the way, the mouse is not the only animal that is in the show.
That's right. I think the structure of the book sort of informs the show. Every book, as you may recall, if you have a child, ends with the mouse wanting, coming back home, coming full circle, and wanting that circle. Along the way, he's taken this crazy zigzag route, and he's followed his wants and his needs wherever his sort of association of thought has led him. And we've tried to keep some of that craziness in the things while still telling a half-an-hour story where somebody has a sort of dramatic goal and something happens in the end, and there's a journey. And I think something really interesting about this series that was kind of Amazon's idea, and specifically Dr. Alice Wilder, who's their educational consultant, that each half hour is made of two 11-minute stories, just like Doug or any of these kids shows. But in each story, the mouse or the pig or the cat or the dog asks for this same object at the beginning of both 11-minute stories, and then each story peels off and goes different directions. And the idea being that behind that, that there's all kinds of possibilities, and exciting kids about the idea that every choice you make may lead to lead you down a different road and a different set of possibilities and a different world. So I think that's what it's like. And then beyond that, it's again sort of looking at a lot of the usual kid issues and things that every will be familiar to. Actual kids. In this case, the human kids are the parents to the animals. They get, if you've seen the books, the kids are like bedraggled parents, drugged behind mouse or moose or cat or pig as they're off on their various adventures. So I think the actual stories and such are not necessarily about just pure desire or pure wanting to go from one place to another, but are also about real kid situations, real things that I think and I hope that matter to kids, and so you'll see a lot of that.
What was it like to be in the writers' room for this particular series? Once you got the writers together, how did you invite them to sort of fire up their own imaginations and contribute to this approach?
Oh, that's sweet. You know, we working in animation, we actually don't that often have a writer's room. We have a kind of half-assed one we do at the beginning of seasons. But it's interesting. Animation is so kind of handcrafted in terms of the writing. Our writers are all over the United States for this show. And I often just speak to them on the phone, and we work it out, and we wrestle it, and then we take it to Nick to Amazon, and we wrestle some more, and we work out the story based a lot of times on their own experience, something that they'll be passionate about, some crazy thing that happened when they were a kid, or an embarrassing thing, or any sort of issue like that. And so, in a weird way, the individual voices, I feel in animation, come out much more than they do at possibly other places, just from that process of doing things, which is kind of interesting and different, I think. Yeah. The other thing that's interesting and different about animation, I think people don't always think about, is that, you know, the voice is in one place, the body is done in another place. So in terms of the acting, a lot of it has to be done on the page. So animation scripts are frequently like twice the length of a regular script because everything only exists in one place. The performance exists on the page, and it's sort of our job to kind of meld the voice and the body or give instruction so those things can seem seamless. So it's a kind of unique, weird way of writing and a weird kind of script that emerges from it. But it's nice to have all these individual voices and individual sort of handcrafted stories come out of it.
What kind of strategy did you have in terms of the voices that actually are in the series? And also, what was your thoughts about music?
The voices were great. They were people who I'd either known or heard before for the animals. The animals are all voiced by adult humans, and Jeff Bennett, who'd been the Man in the Yellow Hat on Curious George, is a voice of dog in this. So all the adults are voicing the animals. That is, Roger Craig Smith does Mouse and Moose, flips back and forth between those two characters doing things. Jessica DiCiccio is Pig, and then there were actual kids for the kid voices, and so that was fun to kind of cast actual kids and find these kids who are actually startlingly good. Then the music, we wanted that kind of handcrafted feel to continue on from the show. The designs look very much like the books. The Mercury, the studio who did the designs, took them to copy the look of the books and make you feel like, I mean, my goal is always to make a kid feel like he's it's seamless, that he's watching the book come to life. And I think they really helped that in terms of the look. And the same thing with the music. It's a real homegrown sound. It's acoustic based for the most part. It's guitars and things. So it has a real a palm of the hand feeling. I think animation appeals a lot of times because it's a world that's contained. It's got boundaries and edges, and you can hold it in your hand, and it's not overwhelming. So I think all those sort of things contribute to hopefully making it feel like the book has just sprung to life with no effort.
Did you have, by the way, an original composer that did a lot of the guitar scoring or the original scoring?
We did. It was all done by, and I know his name is going to slip my mind, so you've got me on the hook, but I can look it up as we speak. Or somebody can look it up.
Incidentally, Ken, Amazon has really, in the last couple of years, under its executives for children's, has really come up with a great track record of kids programming. When you go to the Daytime Emmy Awards every year, they usually get a lot of them for their shows.
Yeah.
They really become a major player in kids' television. And just recently, also, we had the return of Sid and Marty Krofft with one of their classic Saturday afternoon morning shows, Sid and the Sea Monsters. Marty was on our show a few weeks ago.
I heard him.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. He's just a marvelous person, and for he and Sid to like be in their age, like back on top in television, and doing what they want to do, and getting so active. First was Button Stuff for Nick, and now Sigmund is a really great joy, and you get the sense that they have never let the imagination out of themselves.
No, exactly. It's in terms of Amazon, it's really amazing that they're committing so much to this, and then to bring back the Krofft is just what a blast from the past. What exuberance too in their characters and their puppets.
If you give a mouse a cookie, that is the brand new children's series. Actually, it's a series for everybody from Amazon Studios. It premieres tomorrow. You can get it on smart TV sets and smart devices if they have Amazon, or if they have Amazon Fire TV in any particular format as part of a smart TV set or on its own as a streaming stick or other device, you can get the series. We've got the Emmy Award-winning executive producer and head writer on the show, that's Ted Scarborough, and he's live with us from Woodstock, New York, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Saturday afternoon with you live from New York. A few more moments with Ken this half hour, so get on the line if you want to make yourself known. All you have to do is call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Incidentally, I want to let you know that I had an interview earlier today with a wonderful radio talent who knows Blog Talk well. His name is George Bender. He had a radio series called The Mom and Pop Show, and he also has a series that's on today, that just started today, back in the last half hour, called Broadway Musical Melody. It's on TuneIn Radio, and I did an interview with him this morning. You will catch that later on in this show. So after our show, go ahead and check out George Bender's, if you can, Broadway Musical Melody. He does it here in New York, does it at least three times a week on TuneIn Radio. So thank you so much for that, George, and I hope we'll have him on our show maybe around Thanksgiving time. He's a wonderful talent. Really enjoy talking with them. It's just really, really great. Ken, who are some of your favorite people in children's anime or in animation overall? Who are some of your like role models, inspirations, you know, people you enjoy?
Oh, that's funny. That's a good question. You know, I'm a strange child. I grew up without TV, and so I didn't see it for a long time. I'm a weird recent addition to the world of TV. When I was watching TV, there were very, you know, goofy stories. They were like Scooby Doo and Johnny Quest. But in a weird way, I didn't really get to see all the things that everyone else got to see. So I guess it was all in my head, which is not to say I don't follow in the footsteps of a lot of people. But I'm just sort of weirdly naive, and I think that some ways has helped me because I don't know what the rules are. So, but I definitely liked goofy stuff when I was a kid.
It's interesting, though, Ken, that ever since Doug and Rugrats and Ren, I think that those three shows really opened a wide door for individual series creators to say, look, I can get my vision on the air. And it's been interesting to see how it's blossomed in, not just through Nickelodeon, but Cartoon Network, through Boomerang, through other networks. You know, what you can do with animated television, whether it is a show like Samurai Jack, which I think is one of the best animated series I've ever seen in my life. Jane Tarkovsky, I think, is one of the Orson Welles of animation. What that show did broke a lot of boundaries and just beautifully told, beautifully put together. Or Craig McCracken's work, whether it's Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends of the Cartoon Network, what he's done lately with Wander Over Yonder on the Disney Channel. A wonderful mind who just has great imagination, and like the show, has a lot of fancifulness to it, and you can see it in the designs, in the character acting, and Jumpin' Apple's theme music. When Elisha won any award for that theme, the what he called the psychedelic ragtime theme music, it's just great. It all adds up.
But it is an amazing form where you have to invent your own boundaries to some degree, because it could be anything. And so it's the blank page of all blank pages in terms of just being able to create a world. And that's what's so amazing. You can really see things come out of people's heads. And like you're saying, nowadays the floodgates are open, and a lot of different voices and people you wouldn't have heard in the past suddenly are there. And it's an exciting time. It's fun.
Yeah, and we even have a musical coming up sometime next year, SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical, which, by the way, Nickelodeon previewed a couple of years ago here in New York, at least the opening sequence of it at an upfront, is finally coming to Broadway next year. And from what I hear, it had a trial run in, I think, Chicago, and got very good reviews. So who knows? Maybe we'll see a whole floodgate of original animated musicals.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. That's great.
Ken, as this show progresses on Amazon, what's next for you? Putting together a second season of The Thing of a Mouse, or trying a new project?
Well, you may have noticed they labeled this season 1A. There is another 13 half hours that we're doing the mixing on right now, and getting ready to broadcast. And in the meantime, I'm also the head writer of Sesame Street, so I have two full-time jobs at the moment. I'm not thinking too far down the road. So those are keeping me busy. But, you know, we'd love to see more Mouse. Right now we're like the parents who have some present. It's Christmas Eve, and we can't wait to spring it on you with surprises. And hopefully the kids are enjoying it, and I think hopefully kids are excited to see more of Mouse and the rest of the characters. So tonight is Christmas Eve for all of us.
And let's not forget, by the way, that your your semi-day job, Sesame Street, of course, continues both on PBS and on HBO, with new episodes appearing on HBO first and then, I believe, going over later on to PBS. If you give a mouse a cookie, it's the brand new series from Amazon Studios, premieres tomorrow. You can check it out if you have a smart TV set or a smart TV device that picks up Amazon or Amazon Prime Video. And for more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.amazon.com/PrimeVideoKids. That's www.amazon.com/PrimeVideoKids. I think you'll like what you see. It comes from a marvelous writer. Ken Scarborough, thank you so much for being with us. All the very best to you on this series. Also, continued success with Sesame Street with all the crew down there from Sesame Workshop. Great pleasure to have you on. I've enjoyed your work for years, and it is really, really something to get a great new series from you starting tomorrow. All the very best with it.
Thank you very much, Simon. It's been a real pleasure. Have a good day.
You got it. Anytime. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Ken Scarborough from If You Give a Mouse a Cookie on Amazon Studios and Sesame Street on PBS and HBO, joining us live from Woodstock, New York. And now quickly, an update where we catch up on guests and topics we have in this program. Back on August 9th, we presented a show called The Switch. Came out of Canada and is now available on video on demand all over the U.S. of A. It's a show that claimed to have the first major transgender cast and crew. And we had Amy Fox, who is both the creator, producer of the show, and also one of the main stars of the program. Well, a few weeks ago, FX announced a new series from Ryan Murphy called Pose. And Pose is set in the 1980s. It looks at several segments of life here in New York, including the President Trump era universe, when he was doing lecture hotels and all stuff, the downtown literary scene, and the ball culture world. And in doing announcing of this particular series, the press release said that it was the largest cast assemble of transgender actors in series regular roles ever. That's the big word, ever, for a scripted series. Well, guess what? The folks at The Switch, especially Amy and her PR effort, Big Time PR Marketing, learned about that. And they decided to respond to the situation. So I want to give you a little extra point Amy Fox had to say about the announcement of Pose. And I quote, "While we applaud the recent press coverage of FX's forthcoming series, many of these stories have contained factual errors which misrepresent our company, and we hope to see them addressed or corrected." She was referring to the stories that were written by journalists all over the country in response to the announcement of Pose. "While Pose will not make a strong case for high-quality scripted transgender stories on television, these articles suggest that Pose has more trans leads than any other TV show. We are happy to report that this is incorrect. Another series got there first, specifically The Switch. We wish to correct," at the end of the letter, this is what Amy says, "we wish to correct the record not because it's important who was first, but because it is necessary to reorganize, to recognize the vision and bravery of the earliest trailblazers in the nascent realm of scripted transgender content. To be out as trans looked courage in 2014, that's when the pilot for the series was made, when the original pilot episode aired, coming forward as a trans content creator in a space indifferent at best and openly hostile at worst, paved the way for shows like Ryan Murphy's Pose." And that's from Amy Fox, the creator and star of The Switch. And incidentally, if you want to hear that episode we did with Amy back on August 9th, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/television. That's where you can check out all of our recent episodes along the Blog Talk Radio way. You can also check out the podcast version on iTunes.com as well as on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order online. I want to thank all of our guests for being with us these last 90 minutes and all of you for joining us. Remember, coming up on Friday, among our guests, Evan Shapiro, the former head of Pivot and CISO, now his own production company, working on a Pop TV pilot and with some of the people involved in this year's New York Television Festival. We love hearing from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. As we always say around here, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toth, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this enterprise, Al Levy and Bob Chowrish. Tomorrow Televised is brought to you today by Rumble.com, proud development partner of the 2017 New York Television Festival. And it's the folks that remind you that Audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. For a free trial, audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. And if Election Day is happening where you are, please get out and exercise your right to vote. Remember, there are people in this world who are living and dying for the right that you have. They don't get the chance to exercise it. You do. So get out and vote. Make the difference. We'll catch you on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.